And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Lights out, and away we ayo! Welcome to No Breaks, a Formula One podcast from the No Dunks Inc. Classic Factory, proudly a part of the Athletic Podcast Network. We're back!
The boys are back.
The boys are back. Yeah. Whether you're joining us live in the Slipstream team here on YouTube, or if you're part of the Pod Squad listening later on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, maybe the Athletic app, thank you so much for joining us. I'm your host, Trey Kirby, and I'm joined today by our local F1 expert and the biggest Brentford Bees fan I know.
Ooh, did you see those Gordius. Bees? Did you see my bees?
No!
This past Sunday, no. You weren't watching?
I can only watch one international sport, Grady.
Those bees. I've been a Brentford Bees fan for 4 or 5 days now.
They look
and
good?
I'm telling you, they look great on Sunday. They got in a little bit of a hole. They dug themselves out. I'm pumped for this. This is the most excited I've ever been about a Brentford Bees season in my entire life.
All right, I'll hop on the Bee wagon.
Yeah,
as well.
Get in there,
GG,
folks. There's plenty of room on the train.
Yeah, come into the comb. That's what they say.
Yeah, we're gonna start a new podcast called Hive Mind. It's gonna be all Brentford Bees action all the time.
Excellent. I can't wait for the updates as we go on. We've also got our team principal here on the pit wall making the right calls. JD, what's up, man?
Hello. How's it going? Welcome back, Trey. Welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back, kind of. It's good to be back with you guys talking about Formula One, but also Hawaii is pretty fun to go to.
I mean, yeah, you were a true F1 summer break style. Let me just jet set off. Did you take a NetJets there, your own private jet? How did you get there?
Yeah, it was a private jet. You know, I did feel bad about the consequences of it, but to get there quickly, that's exactly what I needed to do. And stay tuned to TreyKirby.com. I'll be dropping my own Valtteri Bottas inspired ass picture later from swimming in the Venus pools. Controversial take: every wedding should be in Hawaii because
that is
it's very cool to go
that's
there.
That's how you separate the wheat from the chaff is those destination weddings, right? Only the real friends make the hike.
Exactly. Because once you're there, you're like, everybody here, we want a party.
Yeah,
we flew a long
committed.
Way to do it.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it's been a while since we've actually done a show together. Last time was Silverstone, but that was in StreamYard because I think you were traveling at the time. The last time in person was after the Canadian Grand Prix, June 21st, since we've locked eyes.
That feels like a lifetime
about cars.
Ago.
How's the past 2 months been for you?
I mean, it's been good. I was in New Jersey a couple of times, and now I'm back. You know, it's good. Life's good. Summer's been nice. I mean, from an F1 standpoint, it's been catastrophic, and I've been going through an absolute, like, spiritual crisis.
Yes,
I'm thinking maybe I need to abandon this sport entirely. But otherwise, things are good.
Yeah, I listened to your Austrian Grand Prix recap with Skeets here in the Classic Factory. I was traveling back from Florida.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that was after a Leclerc win, and I remember
saying,
it ain't over yet. It could still happen. It could still happen. And I was just laughing to myself. Literal LOLs. You thinking that something fortuitous could happen to Ferrari after we'd seen the first third of the season.
That was a real rope-a-dope by the universe on me, right? This false hope that I was given that perhaps maybe we might get a competitive rest of the season. We have gotten an exciting end to the first half of the season.
Yeah.
I think it's been drama-filled, but not in the ways that I had hoped.
Yeah, maybe the drama isn't totally at the top of the table right now.
No.
But the shows were awesome. We had Michelle Beadle as a guest. You did the show last week with the Red Flags F1 podcast. Those guys were incredible. Seemed unfair to me to have three people who knew what they were talking about on the microphone, though. We usually like to go for a 1 in 3. It's a ratio
like
here.
A 1.5 person's worth of knowledge.
Yeah, so I like it. I like it. We're expanding. We're expanding our universe around here. We're finding new and fun guests. I made an appearance on the Scuderia F1 podcast, Kevin Clark's Ringer show at one point. So hopefully we can get some reciprocation as well.
And we might have a couple of more guests this year, a couple of folks I've talked. I'm going to keep it secret for the moment, couple very exciting folks, people who really know what they're talking about, people who actually maybe do this for a living. So that could be exciting.
Very, very exciting. This is basically our 1 year anniversary of launching the show, because we did a mid-season recap for the 2021 season during last NBA offseason, which is kind of when No Breaks really got on and pop, and we talked about our favorite races, the biggest surprises, the biggest disappointments. You want to take a guess at what a biggest surprise or a biggest disappointment was from the 2021 season? I mean, you're looking at my notes, so if you're not getting this one.
Okay. Yeah, I can see your notes, so now I've ruined it.
That's all right. I was laughing when I saw Daniel Ricciardo showing up as biggest disappointment for McLaren last season.
That's got to be a big disappointment from last year. I'm looking at – you know what the big surprise is on there that I honestly didn't remember was Williams with 10 points. Vaguely remember that, but it's like I honestly had kind of – that had gone out of – I had that. The other big surprise on there is Carlos Sainz ahead of Charles Leclerc, which I do remember. I feel like that was a bigger storyline. You know, but the – yeah, I barely even remember where they got those points.
Yeah.
Shows what sort of expert I am.
Once the season is over,
it's all out
there. It's like
window.
A standardized test. You got to learn it for that year.
This is the period of life in which I've had infant twins. So if you're telling me I don't remember that sort of details, like how – like what races did Williams get their points in is like not the sort of information I'm retaining at this time.
Yeah. You can fill it with other important things like swaddling maneuvers, things like that. Got to know how to do it. But looking back, it got me thinking. 2021 was an incredible Formula One season that we watched. I felt very fortunate to have launched the show at that time with the way we had Hamilton and Verstappen going head-to-head. It went down to the last lap of the last race of the season, a controversial ending, but thrilling throughout the entire second half and through the first half of the season as well. You think this has been a good season? Do you think this has been a fun Formula One season so far through the first 13 races?
You know what? I think yes. I think this is a good season. I think for newer fans or even just those with kind of who are a certain amount of recency bias, you might be like, oh, well, it's not as razor thin as it was last year. But I actually think for all intents and purposes, every single race, the outcome is uncertain. There are multiple teams that could win every race. There are plenty of years where that doesn't feel like the case. There are like plenty of – I think if people go back a couple of years ago, there's tons of races where it's lap 5 and Lewis Hamilton is 10 seconds ahead of the car in second, and it's like, cool. Whoever's gonna, it's incredibly clear how this is gonna go down, and there's like there, and that just hasn't there. There are comparatively few of those races this year.
Well, yeah,
I would
it's because
say.
Ferrari gets into a lead and then blows it,
and then blows
first.
It.
That's the difference. This is a blowout season at this point. Verstappen has won 8 times in 13 races,
which is incredible.
Leclerc has won 3, and then a Red Bull and a Ferrari driver, Perez and Sainz, each have 1 win. So 2 teams have won every race so far.
I just think it's. Is this going to go down as like one of the great seasons or most memorable seasons? No, but has it been fun to watch? In my opinion, absolutely yes. Because I walk away from comparatively few of these Sundays being like, that was a boring race. That was uneventful. I think like most of them, it's like something crazy goes down. Or they've either been very high quality from a pure racing standpoint, or they've been very dramatic, even if that drama is fueled by like mistakes or, you know, car failures or whatever it might be, right? It's like, I think it's been fun.
We've always had something to talk about.
100%. 100%.
Things. And this is one of my favorite, like, work days in the entire calendar when we're getting ready to do the midseason review, because I just watch the highlights from every single race. I'm like, this is so much better when you're watching it recapped in 7 minutes, getting excited about something that happened months ago. Because like you're saying, it doesn't totally feel like we're going to have a competitive finish to the championship here like we had in 2021. Even 2020, I think, is going to go down as more competitive for the top two drivers, all things considered. But it at least felt like Ferrari was going to have a chance to knock Red Bull off the top of the pole, which is why we should pull up our standings. Now, take a look here before we get into our favorite races. We got Max Verstappen up top, the driver's standings. He's got, what, an 80-point lead now over Charles Leclerc in P2. Leclerc has only a 5-point lead over Sergio Perez for third. Perez is followed by Russell, Sainz, Hamilton, Norris, Ocon, Valtteri Bottas there with Alfa Romeo in ninth, and Fernando Alonso, he's Alpine for the time being, down in 10th. In the team standings, Red Bull has a pretty solid lead over Ferrari, 97 points away from Ferrari in P2. They're followed by Mercedes right on the heels of the Ferrari there, 30 points behind for P2. Alpine's in P4, followed by McLaren, Alfa Romeo, Haas, AlphaTauri, Aston Martin, and Williams. Only 3 points for Williams at this point. 10 at the break last year. Another step back for Williams, unfortunately. But, Graydon, let's talk about our favorite race. We were talking in the dock. The best race so far this season has been England's Grand Prix, the Silverstone Grand Prix. Other than that, or if you want to even touch on Silverstone, what would you say is your favorite race so far this season?
I mean, yeah, I think I threw that in the dock because I was like, I feel like we're both just going to say that. Especially the last, like, five, however many laps after the restart was, you know, the best racing we've had all year. For me, I look back and, okay, so there's two answers here. There's the real answer, and then there's Graydon's answer, and I'll do the reverse. Graydon's answer is, I really loved Austria because it felt like there was a lot of differing strategies playing out over the course of the race. There was uncertainty at the very end with Leclerc's throttle issue. You actually saw them overtaking Max, and it started to create the impression that maybe, like, oh, this is going to be really competitive and Red Bull just doesn't simply have the best car over the course of the rest of the season. And at that moment in real time, for me, it was like, this is really thrilling because it feels like maybe we've got a fight in our hands and my favorite driver is killing it today. So that was that.
Sure.
For me, the actual one that I, when I thought back on it, that I really loved was actually Saudi Arabia. I thought it was a really good race. You saw, first of all, great battle between Leclerc and Max at the very end of the race. Yep. Max gets the best of him, but that was some terrific racing and some terrific race craft by both of them, especially Leclerc, the way he was kind of gaming the system with DRS, like, you know, where he was letting Max pass so he could repass and things like that. Very clever racing on the part of both guys in real time. You saw great battles between the Alpine. Ocon and Alonso had a great back and forth throughout that race. It was kind of respectful but hard racing between teammates. Very cool to see. And in general, that's a track I've been very critical of, its safety and things like that. But I couldn't help but walk away and feel like this was fun, this was exciting. I really enjoyed this weekend of racing. So that for me was, I think, probably my favorite.
Yeah.
What about you?
A super exciting race. And the thing I really liked about the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix was how it built on my choice for favorite race so far, the Bahrain GP, the very first one of the year. You're mentioning the clever racecraft between Verstappen and Leclerc, like playing the DRS off each other when they're letting them pass so that they can get the chance to overtake again. In the first race of the year, it was Leclerc who came out on top, kind of dummying Verstappen into passing him multiple times until Verstappen had burned out his tires and Leclerc was left. We had a Ferrari 1-2. It looked like we were going to have a real title fight there. And then in Saudi Arabia, it was the complete flip-flop with Verstappen kind of letting Leclerc take the lead, only to DRS him back, overtake, and finish P1. So I thought that was a real fun start to the season. We had the great Haas start in the Bahrain GP. I think Kevin Magnussen maybe finished fifth.
Yeah.
Something really high. It was like, oh, we got another team here who's in the mix. Obviously, both Red Bulls DNF'd in the very first race of the year. It just looked like, you know, if Mercedes wasn't going to be able to keep the pace that they had in 2021, at least Ferrari was stepping in to give us another title contender. So I'm with you. I thought Bahrain was great. I thought Saudi Arabia was great. And then, obviously, Silverstone has been the best race of the season. We've seen multiple times, though, throughout this year, well, we'll have, in Silverstone included, in Austria included, four or five cars like battling through the same corners, which has been very cool to see. Those have been some of the best moments to me. There was like a 9-lap restart at Silverstone where it was Hamilton, Perez, and Leclerc in a battle. Eventually, Fernando Alonso, Lando Norris caught up to them. It's just awesome to see five cars in like deep into the race, you know, 40 laps into the race, actually fighting for position. So for all we talked about new regulations early in the year, it's paid off in some respects, even if we don't necessarily have quite the parity that maybe was pitched to us heading into the year.
Yeah, I think it's right. I think that's right. It's not kind of fully realized yet, you know, the these new cars, these new regs, but it does feel like it's a huge leap forward and you're getting some close racing and an ability to follow through corners that just was not there in years prior. You know, so it's, I don't know, I think it's great. And I also think we're just at the beginning of this era. They're just beginning to iterate on this. It's going to get better and better over time. So I'm very bullish on this era of cars and the quality of the racing that we're going to see in the seasons to come. So.
Follow along if you're there in the Slipstream team, or if you want to leave a comment on YouTube afterwards. Let us know your answers for all of these. Favorite race, we're going to talk about biggest surprises, biggest disappointments as well. So let's move on to our biggest surprise of the season, Graydon. What has really wowed you so far this year?
What is the biggest surprise? So I think that the gap in this kind of this is surprise slash disappointment. I'm kind of cheating here, but I think the gap in between the two McLaren drivers surprises me a little bit. I mean, Norris is really driving very well for a guy who's piloting a car that I think for all, you know, by all accounts is not that strong. I think that I'm surprised that Mercedes has come as far back as they have come. The car looked really limited in the start. It looked like the problems, there was every part of the car was a problem. It was a mess up and down. And the fact that they've been able to get back to a place where they're doing back-to-back double podiums, where they're very much in the fight for second with Ferrari. I think that's a huge comeback on their part. So and something that I on this show, I mean, I actively doubted that they could make that this much of a comeback in that time. I guess if anybody could do it, it's the boys back at Brackley. But I'm still a little surprised. Those are, I mean, big ones. What about you?
Yeah, I think the Mercedes is a good point because, like, probably through the first half of the first half, some would call it the first quarter of the season, all we talked about with them was porpoising. And it was very strange to see Russell outdriving Hamilton almost every single week. But now reflecting back on it, it almost feels like they were just experimenting with Lewis. He's like, I will try anything to get this car back to a championship-level car. Whereas with George, they're like, just drive it straight forward. You're going to excel because your car is better than anything you've been used to. Whereas Hamilton, the experiments were leaving him at the front of the pack or at the back of the pack. He was having to start 8th. He was having to start 10th. Now they've really kind of dialed in their car, and you can see it in the results. Hamilton's still one of the best drivers on the grid, no doubt about it. I think he's going to get a win in the second half of the season. So seeing them actually come back and challenge for P2 in the Constructors' Championship right behind Ferrari, I think is very impressive from then. And then I'm with you. The gap between Norris and Ricciardo is surprising to me because when I think of McLaren this year, I'm like, what a floundering team. What a step back they've taken this year. But then you look at the results, and it's basically just because Ricciardo's been bad in the car for them. Lando Norris, he's 7th in the drivers' championship right now. I know on Reddit they track Formula 1.5 wins, you know, throw out the top three teams at this point because you're not challenging Red Bull, Mercedes, or Ferrari. 4 wins for Lando Norris amongst the other 7 teams there.
Is he leading Formula 1.5 right now?
He's leading Formula 1.5 right now, just ahead of Fernando Alonso. So maybe the car isn't all that bad, and maybe he's just not getting a ton of support from his secondary driver. And I'll also throw Alpine in there for a pleasant surprise as well.
Oh, yeah.
P4 in the Constructors' Championship right now, and I think they've had pretty bad luck. Like
They could easily be not competing with Mercedes for P3, but like confidently in P4, a mile ahead of McLaren, if they didn't have, you know, some of the car gremlins hadn't struck at a few times this year.
Yeah, and it's strange to me because, you know, when I started watching F1, Renault was kind of ascendant, and that's like when Daniel Ricciardo joined the team. He left. Who knows what that's going to end up being as it goes forward, but I don't know. It feels like the fourth place team right now is a tough spot to be, because we've seen like Racing Point was the fourth best team. Last year, McLaren was the fourth best team. As soon as you're there for 1 year, you're going to fall back. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle their second half of the season, because I did note a little testiness at the Hungarian Grand Prix between Ocon and Alonso. I think they touched up pretty early. I know Alonso was bitching about Ocon's defense a little later on in the race as well. So they've taken a step forward this year, which I think is good to see. And it might all completely blow up in their face because Fernando Alonso wants to drive for a green team. Respect to him. All right, as for biggest disappointments, mine is Ferrari. I mean, they completely fooled us, man. They've got a fast car, but now I just think they got lucky. I just think they got lucky early in the season with Red Bull. Failing out,
basically. I think it's the wait. I feel like it's the opposite. I don't think they're lucky at all. I think the car is. I think it's been the fastest car on the track more weekends than not.
That's what I'm saying. They got lucky to actually win early in the year, and now they have not had the luck go their way due to some driver error, due to some car malfunctions, due to some bad strategy stuff. To me, they've got all the talent. They've got all of the skills in the world. They've obviously, like you said, built one of the fastest cars, one of the two fastest, often the fastest, but they got no culture or no chemistry. Like, you've seen a super team blow up so many times in the NBA, and that's what this is to me. This is like throwing the Lakers on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Maybe this is like a semantics thing, but for me, I don't feel like it's like a luck thing, though. Like, I feel like it's like they are self-defeating. Like, okay. It's not like they're like stumbling into these failures. Like, they are screwing it up.
Yes.
You know, like, it is.
Well, yes, they are. They are definitely. Like, that's what I'm saying. They got lucky early. Like, the standard state of things is messing things up.
Okay, so you're saying it's like they got lucky in the sense that they accidentally did a good job.
They accidentally won early on.
They accidentally did a good job.
Anytime Ferrari does something right, it's not on purpose.
I think that they're. I mean, they clearly are the biggest disappointment of the season, as I think there is an alternate reality in which Leclerc is. I don't think he's blowing it out of the water and so far ahead of Max that the season's over, but there is a world in which he is leading the Drivers' Championship right now. It just with a few errors here or there, a few strategic decisions differently. You know, it's that it doesn't take that many differences to, because let's not forget, it's not just more points for Charles, it's also in almost all those instances less points for Max. Sure. And that gap comes way down very fast, right? So he's a big disappointment. But I actually think that there's a few teams that I expected more out of this year.
Who else?
For AlphaTauri is at the top of my list of disappointments. They're just every race they're nowhere to be seen. Gasly, who we repeatedly talked about last year as kind of one of the sleeper best drivers on the grid, looks really mediocre. You know, Yuki, as much as I love the guy and I think he's a fun character, honestly is really having a subpar season.
Yeah.
You know, he's right down there at the bottom with Williams. Speaking of which, you know who I actually, this might sound odd, I'm disappointed in Williams. It sounds odd to be like disappointed in the team that,
I mean,
like,
only 3 points, they had 10 at the break
But also, this was for me, if you're like a team that's struggling at the bottom and it's a whole new regulatory environment and you've got a chance to make a leap forward, you know, they flubbed it. They did not do a good job at all mapping the car to the current regs. They should have sprung forward. They should be, I'm not saying they should be up there fighting for fourth, but there's no reason they can't be in the Haas, Alfa Romeo, like, you know, level fight right now, and because they were better off last year than Haas was, you know. So to me, it's like, if that's the benchmark there, look at the gains that Haas made in just 1 year. I think you have to look at Williams and say they're kind of underperforming.
I guess you're right. They're not even fighting for ninth at this point, which is kind of where Williams has unfortunately been prior to last year. But I'm with you. I mean, I guess I hadn't even really considered Williams to be in the mix, but yeah, they are. And then, like you're saying, AlphaTauri, honestly, just invisible. They're P8 in the constructors. I'm watching all these highlights back. The only time they show up is like Gasly passing into 14th place or crashing into somebody. Yuki have had so many collisions with others. It's just a nothing team really right now.
It's incredible, and I think Yuki's got to be worried about his seat next year. He's not looking great. I don't think he's under contract yet, right? And the comments coming out of Helmut Marko, coming out of Red Bull, they don't or the broader Red Bull organization, not the team itself, you know, don't feel that supportive. I definitely, I don't want to necessarily see him go, but that's a broader organization, the Red Bull Driver Academy, where they are just stacked with talent, stacked with young guys knocking on the door. So, I mean, if you're in that seat, you've got to perform to keep it. And I think he's got to start wondering, does he have it again next year? In general, that's a bummer because unless we forget, it's only 2 years ago that they won a race.
Yeah.
You know, they won a race. Yeah. And I understood a lot of luck and a lot of factors went into Gasly winning that race. But, you know, this is a team that has looked like it's slipping year over year, not building.
No doubt about it. So that's our most surprising, most disappointing. Let's hear what you got in the YouTube comments. We've been giving out Full Beans Driver of the Weekend for the entirety of the races so far this season, Graydon. But after 13 races, it's time to give out the Full Beans Driver of the First Half Award. This goes to the driver who was given the most beans out there. I don't know. I personally didn't go through and like reference my previous beans to see how these actually add up. I just want to know who's kind of been the driver of the season for you so far.
For me, it's George Russell.
What?
I think that
Mr. Fifth Place?
I just think that when you look at the way the car was performing at the beginning of the year, he looked great. You know, I think he's been one of the most consistent. I think he's the most consistent driver on the grid outside of Max, and Max is almost an unfair comparison because of the quality of the car that Max is driving. So I think he's looked great. I think the fact that he's ahead of Carlos and Lewis Hamilton in the standings is very impressive. Carlos is in the far superior car, and Lewis Hamilton is one of the greatest drivers of all time. So being ahead of those guys and Lewis in the same car, no easy feat. I just think he's looked really good. So I'm very impressed. I've always been bullish on George Russell. I've never been like, oh, he doesn't actually have that much talent. I always have thought he could compete for titles in the right car, but I think he's really showing his stuff this year, and I'm impressed.
Yeah, you're
impressed.
Right. He's probably been slept on a little bit, considering, you know, people considered him a potential replacement for Lewis Hamilton down the road. What's it going to be like if Hamilton is actually challenged by Russell? But with Mercedes taking a step back, probably his success has gone underrated this year to continue to finish in the top five. Like every single time he's finished has been super impressive. So that's a great choice, actually.
Who's yours?
Charles Leclerc is my Full Beans driver of the first half. He's the story of every race. Like Max Verstappen is going to go out there and he's going to do his thing. He's going to finish first or second. As long as he finishes, like Verstappen is the most consistent and best driver mixed with the best car right now. So like, he's dominating, and we barely even talk about it because all anybody wants to talk about is Leclerc. If he finishes on pole, if there's a bad strategy decision, if he crashes out from the lead more than once, you know, there's always something going on with Leclerc. He's really been the driver of the narrative, I do feel, so far this season. So for me, I'm giving him my full beans. Half beans I would probably give to Fernando Alonso because he's kind of been that guy for the mid-card, you know, kind of getting in little dust-ups with past champions. He's always pretty racy, and then obviously we've had the silly season drama, which has been a huge story.
I will say that, first of all, that's fair that no doubt in my mind, Leclerc is like the protagonist of this season. Mm-hmm. Even though Max is going to win the Drivers' Championship, it's like he's the story of this year, right? You're 100% right. I will say the other thing is he is driving incredibly. He has taken a leap.
Oh, yeah.
He is the only guy out there who week over week is matching Max in terms of his quality on track. You see the gap. It's a little bit like Lewis and Max last year where they used to drive away from Valtteri and Sergio, and it was the two of them out there. Again, it's Charles and Max are driving away from Sergio and Carlos, and it's them out there fighting for the win, you know, most weekends. I know not 100% of the time. So his quality is very evident, and at the end of the day, he personally has only really made two errors all season, Imola and then France, right? Which, to be honest, Max has made errors too. He went into the gravel in Spain. He spun out, you know, two weekends ago. Whatever it is, it's like, it's not that Max has literally batted 1,000 on his driving. It's just, I mean, Leclerc's errors, in particular France, have been more costly. Mm-hmm. But it's the – so honestly, I think that's a great pick in the sense that he is the guy where I think because people expected him to have a good year, we're underrating – perhaps underappreciating just what a huge leap he's taken this year and how much better he was than last year, I think.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and I think it'll be fun to watch through the coming seasons, through the second half of this season, to see if he's able to put it together the way Verstappen was, the way he was able to kind of like, you know, calm down the crazier parts of his instincts and just drive a smarter race and just get better and better the way Verstappen was till it finally happened for him. It's going to take a while for Leclerc, I think.
Yeah, and so just to continue on this for one more second, I do think there's two things about Leclerc compared to Max and then compared to George and some of these other guys who are emerging as kind of this next generation of contenders now that the Hamilton era is kind of subsiding, is that this is really Leclerc's second season in a competitive car, a car that can mm-hmm. really win races on any given weekend. And George has arguably never even been in that car, even still now. But I think what we are seeing is the emergence of a multi-year title fight that could be very, very good. Totally. I think it's we could be going into an era where it's like year in, year out, there's a small cast of characters that I think includes George, Charles, Max, and potentially depending upon what season, Lando Norris, who I think has the skill. It's just about the car. You know, like, and it could be an awesome series of title fights for whatever period that, you know, before the regs shake up again and maybe you see guys slip up or down. But I think it's exciting, even if maybe this year it's decided. I think this is like chapter one what we'll look back on as like a very fun competitive era.
It took a few years for Verstappen to actually beat Hamilton. Basically, three seasons, right? Like 19, kind of close. 20 seemed like if everything lined up perfectly, maybe he could take down Mercedes. And then 2021, it finally happened. We are kind of in between the 1.5 sort of era for Leclerc at this point, so we shall see how that plays out in the future. Before we go for this break, Graydon, I want to get a random prediction for you from you for the second half of the Formula One season. What's something you think that'll happen that nobody's guessing?
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Fernando Alonso wins a race.
Wins a race?
Wins a race.
I love it. I love it. I have him on the podium. That was going to be one of mine.
Okay.
But that's not bold. I mean, that's just a prediction. You're going for a bold prediction, and
I mean, I'm trying to go a little bit. I mean, if I put money on it, I'm probably not putting money on it. But
he has
here
looked
on a podcast,
capable of winning a race to me. Like, he's been fast out there. He's had, like, he's qualified second, right? Started P2 at one point. I don't think he's led a race yet this season, but he's been close. If a lot of weird stuff happens, he could easily take the
dub. Okay. My argument for this is, first of all, I have no idea if he's actually going to win a race or not, but I'm saying it and I'm sticking with it.
There we go.
But most every season we have a handful of races where things really go awry and you see a really crazy podium. And it doesn't actually have that much to do with the quality of the cars. Certainly a good drivers can make the best out of crazy scenarios and can walk through doors when they open, which is part of the reason I say Alonso. But I feel like we're still waiting. We've only seen Ferrari and Red Bull win races. Mm-hmm. And I think that we will get a couple of races this year where it's a collision between Max and Charles and then an inconvenient safety car lets somebody hop up. And, you know, that sort of stuff happens. That's what led to the Gasly win that we mentioned earlier. You know, so that – I think that sort of stuff does happen and we'll get something like that. Alonso's been knocking of the door on it when he put the car in second. Which race was it? I forget. But, you know, he put it on the front row. You know, I think stuff like that. Was it Canada? Maybe it was Canada.
Could have been Canada.
Yeah, it was Canada. And that sort of stuff happens, and we just haven't seen as much of it this year. So I feel like we're due for a couple races that are crazy in that sort of way.
Yeah, we need some more random drivers on the podium. I would love to see Alonso get a win going away from Alpine. Like, it would be the most awkward thing.
The most
for
awkward
sure.
celebration yeah. ceremony. Everybody, like, being super happy for him, but also
congrats,
not.
Congrats, kind of.
It'd be great.
I like that. My random predictions, I got a Lewis Hamilton win That's not very bold. But I do have Mercedes catching Ferrari for second in the Constructors' Championship.
You like them to overtake them?
Yeah. I mean, Mercedes is trending the right way, and Ferrari is trending Ferrari's way. It ain't going smoothly for Ferrari, and they sound like they don't want to change anything during the break. They're like, we're good. We're good. What we're doing, it's fine.
I think the Hamilton W, I think it's a bolder prediction. Okay. I guess it's not a bold prediction to say a guy who's gotten second a couple of times. Is it? But it's kind of bold in the sense that it's like, it's you know, they're not.
They're third place.
They're whether or not they end up second in the driver standings, they have the third fastest car on the grid. Like kind of no, whether they have they wiggle their way into second.
Sure.
So it's like in that sense, yeah, it's not easy to win races when you know in that. So I think it's bolder than it sounds. Previous years, that would have not been a bold prediction.
Yeah, exactly right. I think Lewis Hamilton's going to win one here.
Yeah.
It feels good to get back to predicting that, though. I remember I used to predict that for every single show. The good old days.
Oh, that is a good old
Bob, we want to hear from you, so let us know in the YouTube comments. Tweet at us. Send us some emails. Biggest surprises, biggest disappointments. Hit us with a random prediction. And, of course, you got to give out your full beans. We're going to take a break here. When we get back, we're talking basketball.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Back with no breaks. In our first ever episode about a year ago, Graydon, we did Formula One drivers as NBA players, but this is the remix. Formula One constructor teams as NBA teams. We'll go through all 10 teams on the grid, and we will give their NBA counterparts, you know, from maybe like a legacy standpoint, a personnel standpoint, and certainly from a vibe standpoint. I'll get us started. My first team, number one in the standings. Not number one in most people's hearts, I would say. Red Bull Racing. Their NBA equivalent to me is the Golden State Warriors. I will say it's not a 100% perfect match, but both teams, defending champions. Both teams would consider themselves light years ahead of the competition.
Okay.
Max Verstappen, Stephen Curry, two of the greatest talents in their each individual sports, their personalities, they don't necessarily line up together, though I do know that Steph likes to call himself the petty king, and Max Verstappen, he's been known to be petty in the past. I would also argue that Checo Perez is the Clay Thompson of Red Bull Racing. He plays both sides of the ball.
Yeah, he's a defender.
He's an aggressive driver. He's a defensive driver. He's generally well-liked. And obviously, Christian Horner is Draymond Green, the driving force of personality behind the team and a vivacious trash talker.
Okay, I get it. When you went into that, I was like, what are you talking about? Other than the champion, other than the title.
Sure,
I mean,
sure,
I get
sure.
like the most recent title, but I was like, I don't get it. But now I think I get it.
Yeah, you're thinking the Warriors are too well-liked, aren't you?
I don't know. You know what I was thinking is that I would have compared the Warriors to a different team.
Well, I guess we're going to compare every team to the
well,
Warriors.
Well, we're going to go all 10 teams. How are all 10 teams like the Warriors in their own way?
Okay, well, I actually like that. We've changed the subject completely.
I get it. No, that's good. I don't know if I have an alternate there.
It's tough.
Maybe it's tough. I was going to go with something like it's for this exact era, for this exact moment, because I feel like there's like maybe they're more like the Miami Heat or something like that,
okay.
Like savvy, perennially competitive, have had eras of great dominance.
All right, something like that.
That's what I was going to go with, but I like where you. I like how you came.
I would definitely accept Miami Heat. I would probably think more like, you know, LeBron James era, 2011 to 2014 Miami Heat.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is it almost you have to contextualize it.
That's fair as well, though. All right, let's move on. Ferrari, what you got?
Okay, so for me, I'm thinking
the Warriors.
The Warriors, and why? But why the Warriors? So I was thinking you've got a team that is an iconic. One of the iconic franchises in the league, kind of one of the team that is so deeply associated with the sport itself, a team that used to be one of the most dominant teams of all time, and in recent years, at least very recently, has been a contender, but kind of a poser contender. I went with the Boston Celtics.
I love it.
You know, so that's like great. Somebody who's knocking on the door, but honestly can't really put it together and hasn't been able to pull in a title, despite the fact that everybody thought they had all the pieces in place to win a title, kind of is falling apart when push comes to shove. And then for me, it's really though, I feel like there's only really one other that you compare them to, and it's they're kind of the Celtics or they're the Lakers. The iconic teams, and then also the Lakers kind of tendency towards being a bit of a train wreck in recent years feels relevant.
Yeah, know? Definitely true. I actually love the Celtics, and I think it is certainly timely as well with the Celtics going to the finals and coming up short against the Warriors, who are Red Bull. You got to lose before you can win. We saw it with every champion out there. Even Michael Jordan lost in the playoffs back in the day. So Celtics is a great one. They got a great young star in Jason Tatum. I guess he's the Charles Leclerc of the Boston
That's
Celtics. And
thinking,
Carlos
yeah.
Sainz, he makes a nice Jaylen Brown as well. Right? You're like, definitely the second guy, but a great second guy to have.
Great second guy to have, and like Jaylen Brown's super talented, but like also most talented guy who can't really dribble. You know, it's like, Carlos Sainz, like super talented, but most talented guy who like kind of can't help but drive around in the gravel all race. It's like that, you know, it feels
nice.
Feels relevant.
Jaylen and Jason, similar names.
Wow. Yeah.
Carlos and Charles, similar names.
I mean, this is lining up. I am not going to. They only get worse from here and clunkier from here.
Yeah, it gets a lot harder.
It's in the
it
end
gets a
of
lot
it.
Harder
the bottom
as we go
of the standings was a lot harder than the top.
Here's a tough one for me. Mercedes, the Silver Arrows. I kind of wanted them to compare them to the Lakers. We saw that a lot early in the season
when
Russell was out driving Hamilton. It looked like they were a championship team that had completely fallen off, even though they still got one of the better talents out there. But I ultimately settled on the Milwaukee Bucks. Lewis is Giannis Antetokounmpo, one of the best drivers, one of the best players out there. George Russell is both Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday because he's a great second star, just like both those guys are. So to me, just like the Bucks, probably have the best player in the league. Mercedes has at least the second best driver on the grid, but they still have no chance at a title, just like the Bucks had no chance at a title last year due to injuries.
Okay, I like it. I get where you're going. This is the one I thought you were going to say, the Warriors.
Okay.
I get the Warriors came back and won the title this year, which screws up my analogy, but I was thinking it's like they had like a super dominant era during the 2010s in which they kind of, you know, in which they just were leaps and bounds ahead of other people, but not unchallengeable, and found themselves being beaten in super dramatic, unexpected fashion at some point along the way. But now, even in after that era, are still competitive, but probably not the same level of dominance as they once saw. That was going to be my argument.
That's not bad.
My
argument. That's not bad. If George Russell was a little bit more smiley, he could be Andrew Wiggins, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but he could.
I mean...
All right, moving on. P4 in the Constructors' Championship is Alpine right now. What you got, Graydon?
Okay. I thought there was a lot of different ways I could have gone with this one, but I'm going with the Brooklyn Nets, mostly because what have you got here? You've got a seemingly competitive team in which a two-time world champion is walking out the door on you, throwing everything into chaos.
I mean,
that's what I. That
lines
what
up
got.
All right.
That's what I've got, and seen. I mean, that's I don't know if the comparison goes much beyond that, but it feels like a team that was on the verge of being confident, was on the verge of competing, and suddenly things are falling apart for it unexpectedly because of a star that's on his way out of town.
I think that's perfect. You Like, when I was on the Scuderia F1 podcast, they asked me, what's something you would change about the coverage? I'm like, silly season could be even more crazy than it already is. If you look at the way the NBA does things,
yeah.
If F1 were to able to blow the transfer portal open the way that the NBA does, it would be crazy.
Oh, you could, and like, trade exactly, drivers?
Well, that's almost exactly what happened after I said it was like, you know, Fernando Alonso opts out. He's going to be going to Aston Martin, leaving the team completely floundering for what they're going to do, even though they're in the midst of supposedly a solid season for them. That to me is very NBA, to be making almost like a trade request, just being like, well, this team that I put together, it ain't for me anymore. And that's similar to what's happened with Alonso coming back from a few years out, having some success and then bouncing almost immediately. So I will willingly accept the Nets as a comparison for Alpine. And I'll also say, you know, Alpine, back when they were Renault, had a very cool color scheme. Black and yellow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Now they've gone to their French-looking color scheme, which is fine, but
they
kind of milk with toast.
They had my favorite, one of my favorite liveries, like, designs, because depending on whether you were looking at it from the front or looking at it the side, it looked all black or all yellow, which I thought was cool. It was like a cool effect. I thought that was nice.
All right, moving on. I got McLaren up next. I see some people in the Slipstream team saying you should compare them to the Suns. Color-wise, it makes sense. The way the Suns fell apart in the playoffs, it also makes sense. But I'm likening them to the Philadelphia 76ers because they've got one supreme talent, both of these teams do. Joel Embiid for the Sixers, Lando Norris for McLaren, and then they've got another guy. That used to be Ben Simmons for the Sixers. He's a little bit of a Ricardo, like, what's going on out there?
What's going on?
But now it's Harden. An older guy who is maybe not at the peak of his skills right now. That's also Daniel Ricciardo. So the team is always relevant, and they might have a chance, but it ain't going to happen.
I like that because, okay, Harden was never beloved the way Ricciardo was beloved. But he is a big personality. Yeah. He is like a big personality who was a supreme talent, and that is seemingly going awry for him late in his career.
All right, so 76ers for McLaren as well. And I also think McLaren wants to be loved, just like Joel Embiid and the 76ers. They also want to be loved. They love the awards. Moving on down the list, Alfa Romeo. Who's your NBA comparison, Graydon? This one I thought was tough.
This was very tough, and I struggled with it a lot. I am going to go. But as I thought more about it, I decided that I was going to go with the Portland Trail Blazers. Okay. And the reason I went with the Blazers is because I threw a dart at the board and that's what came up. I was kind of like, okay, classic team, one of the iconic kind of brands of the sport, and one that many decades ago was very competitive, but in more recent times kind of bounces along in relative mediocrity.
Sure.
Not towards the bottom, not towards the top, just kind of somewhere washing out in the middle. And that's probably actually a little bit harsh on the Blazers, maybe, but felt like the Blazers are probably a little bit better on average than Alfa Romeo is in terms of how they do, but something about right for me. And I also feel like Valtteri is kind of a weird fan favorite the way Damian is.
Sure.
Like people do have outsized love for Valtteri.
Yeah, people want good things to happen for
partly
Botox,
because
just
he's
like
a second fiddle. I know Damian's the guy in Portland, but I think he's a second fiddle league-wide.
Yeah.
You know, he's never like the man, you know, a top five NBA player.
He's like the next best thing to Steph Curry.
And it feels like Valtteri has been chugging along for years now as like the second best thing behind an all-time great. It felt like there's something there.
That's really great. You actually hit on that. I was going Rockets. I was like, did I literally just...
That was a tough one. These only get harder from here.
yeah, exactly right. Up next for me, Haas. I think they're the Charlotte Hornets because everybody wants them to do well because we just like them. Like, we just like them for no reason.
I love that.
Mick Schumacher is LaMelo Ball. Talented. And he's got the name recognition. Gunther Steiner is Teal Uniforms. Everybody loves the teal uniforms. Everybody loves Gunther. And Kevin Magnussen, I put down PJ Washington, but only because he's like a notable joke amongst no dunks, the Chevy Trax of the NBA. So Kevin Magnussen, just a solid driver out there, has moments of greatness like PJ Washington hitting 6 threes in his first NBA game, something like that.
Love it.
The Hornets, the Haas Hornets. Actually, sounds all right.
Okay, love it.
Who you got for AlphaTauri?
Okay, AlphaTauri, I'm going with the Oklahoma City Thunder. For a couple reasons.
Okay, okay.
First of all, a team that changed its name in somewhat recent history.
good.
Used to be called something else. Now it's got a different team name. But also is, I feel like, just like a perennial young guys team. It's just like always, like guys are always cycling through.
Sure.
Like it's always got this young crop of youth. It's whether it's Presti's pick hoarding or the fact that, you know, AlphaTauri is a feeder team for Red Bull. It feels like they just are kind of always on the younger edge of the league / series. So that's who I had there.
That's pretty solid, actually.
I don't know.
Because it kind of feels like similar to AlphaTauri. If you cut your teeth at OKC, eventually we'll get you on a better team. You know, we'll get you to a good team where you can do some stuff.
OKC, obviously, OKC's peak as a franchise is much higher than AlphaTauri's peak. But AlphaTauri, lest we forget, has won races. They won races with Vettel. They won a race with Gasly. It's not as if they've never stood on the top step, which also to me felt, you know, it's just been a few years now, you know, since they had that, since they had a generation where we have got the next generation of great drivers, because Vettel, Max, Carlos Sainz, so many incredible guys have driven there. So
I think that's great. P9 on the Constructors Championship is Aston Martin, and this one was the most confusing for me. I don't know if they're the Knicks or if they're the Kings. They could be the Knicks because they had one random good season.
Yeah.
You know? They just had that one pink Mercedes season where they finished very high up. They've got a lot of nepotism, you know, is getting one of their drivers a spot. And then they've got an old guy, Sebastian Vettel, alongside him. That's not dissimilar to the way the Knicks obtained Jalen Brunson. And, you know, Tom Thibodeau loves to play old guys. They could also be the Kings because the Kings fool us every year. You know, as soon as the Kings are eliminated from the playoffs, I feel like they go 8-0. As soon as there's no expectations, that's when the Kings are at their best. That's when Aston Martin was at their best. They've also got a young talent that I'm not totally convinced on. Lance Stroll for Aston Martin, De'Aaron Fox for the Kings, and then one former star, Sebastian Vettel / Domantas Sabonis. But I will admit,
I like the Knicks one more only because, like, it feels like the sort of – this is a hard one.
Yeah.
But it does feel like the – there's a certain, like, arrogance to the Knicks organization and front office, or like that to me maps to like Lawrence Stroll and his sort of belief that Aston Martin was just destined to compete for titles and would after they made all these upgrades. But honestly, you know, those things have not borne fruit and it's been backsliding as an organization. That is a tricky one.
This is a good one. Good comment though from Andreas here in the Slipstream team. Aston Martin are the Clippers. They spend so much money but never win anything.
I mean, that's not wrong.
That's not wrong. So good call on that one. P10, 3 points only on the season so far. Bring us home, Graydon. Who is Williams? If it's not OKC, I'm honestly kind of shocked here.
Okay, I wasn't going to say OKC.
Sure.
Well, I already
said OKC. They've been taken.
So, okay, I had two options here, and I'm going with, and it's, you know what? They're two appropriate options. It was either going to be Bulls or Spurs, but I'm going with Spurs. I'm going with Spurs because the Bulls are much better than the Spurs right now, and the Spurs, who are kind of in the middle of bottoming out, like a formerly great team, one of the iconic teams of the league, like a team that dominated an era, but is in the middle of fumbling its way through a transition and is currently bottoming out.
Yes,
it feels like they actually. That's a little harsh to San Antonio, I think, who honestly has never reached kind of the bottom of the barrel the way Williams has. Like, just been like, so it's too harsh of a characterization. Maybe the Rockets having bottoming out is more fair, but I don't know. But I went with San Antonio. I was only gonna say the Bulls are too good to be Williams. I was only gonna say in the sense that when Williams was dominant, they were incredibly dominant, but now has had an era where they just are not as relevant. So that was where that was coming from, but I feel like that works for San Antonio as well.
Well, I'm glad the Bulls actually won some games last year, because it would have been very depressing for you to be completely accurate on Williams and the Bulls being
if the Bulls had had a bad season last year, yeah, like it actually five. Would have been a good comment.
Yeah, dominant back when TVs were super grainy. That's the last time anybody remembers them actually winning anything. So, thank you to the Spurs for trading all of your guards and becoming Williams. That's our list of Formula One constructors as NBA teams. Let us know what you think down below. What did we miss? What did we get right? If you got any other comparisons, chuck them in there as well. We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, some updates maybe on some driver stuff. You in the Peloton cult as well?
I am a cult member. Dennis Morton. Every time the beat hits, the same foot kicks, my friend.
That's exactly right.
I have a lot of fun coming up with like fake Dennis Morton lines. He might say like things where I'm just. It's like, you know, sometimes friends, you know, when you're, you know, times are hard, times are tough, but that's why you just gotta, you know, get on that bike and keep pedaling. So we're all in this together, friend. That's why we're dancing in the dark with the boss. Here we go. Turn the light. Like, turn that up. Like,
that is spot on. Spot on. He leans towards the cheese sometimes. Yeah, I must say. Like, but yeah. I love it. You got to buy in when you're in a cult.
Very funny. Once you start following one Peloton instructor on Instagram, you start following all of them.
Did every Peloton instructor get married this summer?
Yeah. I feel like they're going to weddings like every 3 days. It's crazy to me. My one complaint with Peloton is that they play Here Comes the Sun too often, but it's not the Beatles version. And if you're changing the melody of a Beatles song, you better be good. You better think you got better melodies than Paul McCartney and John Lennon. And guess what? You don't.
If you take too many classes, like I'm a big Tunde guy. I'm a lot of Tunde Oyeneye classes. It's like a lot of songs do come back up. But there's a few staples in there.
All right. Speaking of something that's coming back up, silly season. What a segue. Let's talk about Oscar Piastri and Daniel Ricciardo. I feel like we should bring Lee Ellis in here for his Australian insights. What's going on, Graydon? I listened to the podcast last week. The Piastri tweet dropped mid-show. Felt like a trade deadline to me. But what we've got going on at this point, we know Fernando Alonso, he's going to Aston Martin. Lock it in.
Correct.
That's the only thing that's completely locked in, I feel like, at this point.
That is the only thing that I feel 100% confident saying I know that will happen.
But it does feel like Piastri is going to be driving for McLaren next year.
I think so. I literally pulled out my phone just to double check that, like, during the course of this show, that like things haven't changed yet again. Because now I'm like a little bit traumatized that, you know, everything we say is going to be out of date, like at any given moment. It does feel like Piastri wants to drive for McLaren. McLaren wants him to drive for them, and that Alpine's contractual standing is not airtight. It seems like I obviously haven't, you know, looked at the contract myself, but most of the people I've seen commenting on it seem to think that it's not, you know, he's not as locked down as maybe Otmar Szafnauer was initially suggesting, and that their tweet announcing him would clearly, you know, lead you to believe. So that, you know, it feels like that is the most likely outcome at this time, but there is a board that reviews contracts and will eventually adjudicate the matter. And I guess their ruling in this will be very critical. I guess there's a possibility that they will say you are contractually obligated to drive for Alpine, at which point you'd have to presume Piastri drives in Formula One versus stubbornly says, no, I do not want to drive for them. I am not doing that. I will sit out a year or whatever. Huh. That would be
Ben Simmons.
I guess that would
be 76ers.
Yeah, but that would be crazy to me.
Has that ever happened before? A team basically saying, sorry, we got you under contract. You're driving for us no matter what.
I gotta presume so, but not to me. Is anybody in the Slipstream team remember that? Yeah. I don't. In recent memory, that doesn't come to mind for me. I'm not going to say never, because there's definitely some Wild West days throughout the history of Formula One. I will say, I also don't think that'll happen, because from what I've read, Piastri has a decent relationship with Alpine, always had a good relationship with the team, and this is partly just being – I'm not going to say that he's not his own guy and it's just all on Mark Webber or other people advising him, but his manager, Mark Webber, former F1 driver, and like other people felt like McLaren was a better choice for him and wanted to make that deal happen, so they're pushing for that. It's not so much that Piastri – like resents Otmar Szafnauer or something like that. That's at least I don't know how he really feels, but the reporting I've seen suggests it's also not as toxic as all that. It's just gotten really messy and complicated.
Yeah, they probably found a way to get to a team that they would prefer to drive to, and they're going to take it. Whereas Alpine is probably like, oh, we thought we had you locked up. Maybe we forgot to do our signature at the right time.
In their defense, you know, not very long, you know. Alpine also thought Fernando Alonso was going to be driving for them next year. They were very caught off guard and had told Oscar Piastri, you're going to drive somewhere else next year. And it was likely to be probably Williams or McLaren. And he was like, well, I want it to be McLaren, so I'm going to try to hash out a deal with McLaren. You know that. So I don't think it's that shocking that he went and did all that and that he now wants to stick with it. It's just really blown up in, I would say, mostly Alpine's face.
Yeah, I would agree. Is McLaren a better seat than Alpine, do you think?
I don't feel like it is. I don't necessarily think so. I would say this year I think Alpine's been the better car. They're ahead in the standings, but I also think that they've probably had the more consistent car. They've had worse luck than McLaren. I think that what surprised me about Alonso leaving in the first place was him going to a significantly worse car. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Piastri's thinking here long term. You know, maybe he likes the culture more at McLaren. Maybe he's gelled with the guys there more. I don't know. But it's definitely – this is a wild, hot mess.
No doubt about it.
That nobody anticipated.
My next question, I guess, would then be, like, what's the Piastri scouting report? I know he won F2. I know he's got some hype, but, you know, people put up the stats, and he was not as dominant in F2 as Verstappen was or as Charles Leclerc was.
Sure.
But he's the guy who's, like, calling the shots on all this stuff before he even makes it to Formula 1.
I think he's thought of as a, you know, as a guy who won Formula 2 is a rookie and had won Formula 3 before that. You know, he's thought of as one of these ascendant talents who, like, very assuredly deserves a shot, deserves a drive, right, and a chance to see what his stuff is in an F1 car. I think that, you know, how is he going to really react? I don't know. I don't know how he's exactly looking his testing for Alpine or what that testing is going to look like over the rest of the year if he ends up not staying. I don't know whether they'll honor their obligation to give him a certain number of hours in the car. But, I mean, he seems to me like a guy where he is on that very, very, very short list. In fact, at the very top of the very short list of this guy that at least deserves a couple of seasons to see whether he's got the stuff.
I remember people were saying it was a surprise that Zhou Guan Yu got the seat with Alfa Romeo last year ahead of Piastri after the way their Formula 2 seasons went. The other question then, I guess, is who's going to be driving for Alpine? Who will be the second seat there?
I have no idea. I mean, it seems like a lot of people are saying Daniel Ricciardo. He came from Renault when he moved over to McLaren, and Otmar Szafnauer and who, you know, is a different, you know, person running the team now has said no hard feelings there. We'd happily have him back. I think he's a talented guy. So it's possible that they would welcome him in the seat. My understanding is there isn't another top tier guy in the kind of Alpine Driver Academy pipeline that they're looking to bring up that's like their Piastri number two, at least not to the best of my knowledge. So I really don't know. You know, I've heard floated that wouldn't it be cool if they got Pierre Gasly, you know, two French drivers on a French team. That came up last week. And certainly Gasly's relationship with the larger Red Bull organization feels a bit rocky. Some of the comments from Helmut Marko and other folks, their confidence in him seems to be waning. So if there was a way – but – that contract signed, and seemingly it's a done deal. Although I guess as we're learning in real time, contracts are only so.
You've been following the NBA for how long?
Yeah,
contracts don't matter.
Yeah, so it's. I don't know. That is a question mark that I wish I had a better answer. Do you? I mean, do you have any idea?
No, I have no idea. I'm feeling like a total sicko because now I'm learning about Formula One contracts. Like, apparently Daniel Ricciardo has a humongous buyout that he'll be seeking from McLaren, so he's going to get paid. Allegedly, Pierre Gasly has an out clause in his contract where he could leave for a team that finishes ahead of AlphaTauri in the Constructors' Championship, which is almost every team at this point. So he could go to Alpine, which would be cool, two French drivers. He would be, I think, the unquestioned number one over Esteban Ocon, though they're maybe at the same level. I think Gasly's a little bit better. So it remains to be seen. This is going to be a crazy, silly season. It's already started off with that, and I always think it's so awkward coming back after the break when teams drivers have signed deals with different teams. Like, no matter where Alonso ends up driving next year, he's going to be Aston Martin. He's got to finish out the year this year. And it still behooves Alpine to have him win as many races as he can so they can get paid out at the end of the year, too. So crazy, crazy stuff. I would love to see Gasly get another chance at a better car, though. I'll tell you that much.
I would be – listen, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know how interested Alpine is. That's definitely more fan speculation than I've seen from any kind of official channels. However, I do like the idea. It feels to me like he's run his route. He's not going to get another shot in – the RB. I really just don't think so. I'd love to see him just shake it up and ride it out with a different team for a bit. I don't know. I would be happy with that outcome. For me, the least, I don't want to be a hater here, but I'm not that excited about the idea of Ricciardo taking the seat. I know everybody loves him and he's fun and Drive to Survive and he's a big personality and he's like a fan favorite, but he really feels like he's struggling out there. Totally. And there are so many young, talented guys that deserve a drive. And I just don't know if I think that's a smart move by Alpine, who it's like, hey, we're in a dogfight with McLaren. Let's take their like far second best driver and replace him in our lead spot. I don't think that makes sense.
Nobody gets more engagement on social media though, Graydon.
I get he's great and he is a total character. He's super fun, but it's like I just think that's a mistake and they'd be better off with with somebody else.
They'd be better off with anybody else. I'm with you. We shall see as the table turns, we shall see.
Time ticks
moving
on.
Moving on to what I think shall be a new segment around here, Graydon. I'm going to call it Lewis Hamilton doing stuff. You mentioned last week he's part of a group that now owns the Denver Broncos. Here's what Lewis Hamilton was doing this week. He's on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine. Got a profile in Vanity Fair magazine. Here's the thing that caught my eye. It's a tweet from ESPN F1. Lewis Hamilton was set to star as a fighter pilot in Top Gun Maverick, but had to back out because filming clashed with the F1 season. How pissed was Vin Diesel when he saw this? This guy was gonna be in Top Gun, and I'm showing up ready to drive a car, and he won't drive in Fast and Furious 10 with me. I was feeling for Vin when I saw that.
That you saw that, and your mind went instantly to Vin Diesel and
look,
how
man,
he feels.
We have a 20-year saga about driving a car as fast as you possibly can. The best driver in the past 20 years is friends with the guy who started it, and you're telling me he's not going to be in it.
The real,
but he
speed.
Wants to be in Top Gun. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, because that's where the real speed's at, baby. It's in the sky.
Speed is in the sky.
That's where the guys are. I mean, it would have been fun or funny. I mean, I'm down for more like weird F1 cameos. I want totally. Like more like super tertiary. What? Like I want, you know, it's like I'm trying to think of who's. I don't know. I haven't
Something
seen the
where
new
he's
Top
not
Gun.
Driving
so I don't even
or
know.
Flying anything? Yeah. Like he's just a.
It is like Pierre Gasly, like it's like a French, you know, they're like, oh, we're going to go battle the bad guys together. Did they even say who the bad guys are in this one? I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Have
I heard it's good.
You see Top Gun Maverick yet, JD?
Yeah, I saw it.
Is it good?
Oh, it's great. It's really good.
Yeah.
Okay. It lives up to the hype, which is seems crazy because incredibly hyped. But I liked it in spite of myself. And we watched the original like 3 days before because the kids had never seen it. And they were like, what are we watching? What is this?
It did not, for and them, it didn't
for
hold
them,
up.
They were like, I'm like, this was like the best movie when it came out. Like, but they were just, do we have to go see this movie? Like, because we
So
had,
did they like the new one?
They loved it. They loved it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They're big Mission Impossible guys. And so they like Tom Cruise and stuff. They just couldn't believe I guess it was quite cheesy, and yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it is fair. A little bit. Nothing really happens in the first one. They're in school for
a lot.
Like the first three quarters of the movie. So,
can I have a gripe about the first one?
Yeah.
Real fast. My problem with it is the way they resolve all the drama at the end. You know, he's up there. They're in this dogfight with these MIGs, mm-hmm. and he starts thinking about Goose. He starts to panic. Tim Robbins is behind him. Merlin, right? Tallest Academy Award winner of all time.
Yeah,
Tim Robbins.
Right.
And he decides that he's like gonna. He's like, I'm going to fly over here and kind of like take a moment to wrestle with my demons. And like, everybody's like, oh no, like Maverick's disengaging. And he like, so he flies over there. Then he like gets it together. He comes back and he kicks everybody's ass. But like, that's not how a battle works. You don't get to just like call time out and like go over here and like cool out and then like come back.
I need a moment. I need a moment.
That's ridiculous that he just is. It does that. I thought that was always a peculiar resolution to the film.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Are you sure that it was Tim Robbins in the back of that?
I'm pretty sure. I think it's Merlin. He plays.
I'm gonna look it up. You gotta continue.
Look this up. The Slipstream team. If I'm wrong, somebody will be actively calling me on it right now. I 100% assure.
There's not much more on the rundown. So if we want to spend the last 5 minutes figuring out where Tim Robbins was situated, it would actually fit in here. Because what I was gonna ask you, Graydon, is like, what are we gonna do for the next month? What are we possibly gonna do? Because the next race isn't until August 28th in Belgium. At Spa, a classic Grand Prix. We had a bad one last year, all rain. So what are we going to do? We got a few weeks here. I know y'all mentioned.
Let me break in here. Tim Robbins was, in fact, Merlin.
Boom.
Wow.
There we go.
How did he fit in the cockpit?
He's so tall.
Crazy.
Incredible. Incredible.
Well, maybe that's what we should do is watch Top Gun.
Watch Top Gun?
We've got some movies to watch.
You mentioned Driven.
Absolutely.
You mentioned that to me.
Okay.
Have you seen it, JD?
I have not.
I've never seen it either.
I saw it in the theater. Like, it probably came out when I was in high school.
This is Stallone one, right?
Stallone and
is it
quarterback.
Okay, no. So we're going to watch Driven. Yeah. We're going to have on a guest, or we'll just reveal now, my buddy Jerry Hildebrand, who drives for an IndyCar, is going to join us on the podcast, talk a little bit about real racing and open wheel racing, the difference between Indy and F1. Cool. Really excited to have him on. I think he'll have some cool stuff to say.
Don't forget to ask him if he likes pumpernickel toast.
We're going
to
talk about pumpernickel toast. Yep. We're going to talk about all these things. I think And then soon we'll be back. Spa is at the end of this month.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
Feels a long way away to me.
It does feel. But
3 weeks?
We'll be there soon. We will find a way to fill the time, I assure you.
Indeed we will. Send us some emails, nodunks@theathletic.com. Also, another thing I wanted to pitch. You mentioned wanting to do a Graydon Explains segment at some point where you actually explain how things work in Formula One. So topics for that, send those in as well.
Send those in if there's things you want to understand how they work. This will involve me having to go and research them and learn enough about them that I can explain them. There's not necessarily tons of things I could just rattle off how like the NGUK
works. Look how fast
UK
we got
works.
To the bottom of whether or not Tim Robbins was Merlin.
I mean, I get to the bottom of it. I knew it all along.
You did.
I never doubted it for a second.
Never doubted it. Follow Graydon at Mr. Gordian on Twitter. You think Kevin Durant's going to get traded this week, Graydon?
I have no idea. Not this week.
I agree. It doesn't
not
feel like this
week.
I saw Josiah was tweeting that he's got Steve Nash and Sean Marks' back, but
yeah,
it doesn't feel like this week.
No, I'm going to say not this week.
Yeah, I went away for a week, and it felt like nothing happened in the NBA, JD. Absolutely nothing.
That's because nothing did happen.
It was great. Great timing.
Perfect timing.
But unfortunately, it means, see you, buddy. We don't have any basketball podcasts scheduled because right now it's all just guys playing at pickup leagues, pretty much. But we got No Bunts tomorrow. That's Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern. That's going to be Tass and Lee.
Yep.
I expect on that one. Great to see Judgy Sockin' Dingers give Lee something to talk about. I'm sure we'll hear some random cricket names as well. We've got Is This Good on Thursday with Matty O, 1 p.m. Eastern. He'll be hosting that one with Lee and myself. Looking forward to that.
Do we know what's up for debate in what is good? No.
We have not been told yet.
Haven't seen it yet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Matteo, keeping secrets. What is
Well, he's just madly researching stuff and trying to come up with the best topics.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's how he rolls.
Is this topic even good? Should really be the question. Was this was this even good to discuss?
Are these,
I'm going to do a meta podcast where I just critique his choices.
Next summer. That's going to be the next podcast next summer. Go back, listen to season one and decide if it really was good. Yeah. So that's Wednesday, that's Thursday, and we'll be around if any of these big trades actually do happen. But until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And I got to say, Graydon, straight up bars last week. Be fast or be last.
There you go. That's
thanks for joining us.